739-WPFW-FM.org. Again, another excellent show from Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, hosts this morning. And that which supports you must be supported. 800-222-9739-WPFW-FM.org. You make everything here possible. 750 to go for Democracy Now. We ask for your support. We implore you to support that which supports you, to keep Democracy Now here, WPFW here, for another 48 years. And you are in tune to your station for Jazz and Justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time, WPFW, Washington.
Friends of the Congo and WPFW invite you to Love Sound, an evening of Soul Sisters in performance on Sunday, October 20th, 5 to 8 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street, Southwest Washington. Performers include Free Benjamin, Wayna, Anna Mulago, Ayana Gregory, Congolese artist Deja Bell, and Maimuna Yusuf. Details, including a complete list of performers, at WPFWFM.org or friendsofthecongo.org. All proceeds benefit Friends of the Congo's DRC, Women, Peace, and Security Center in Kinshasa. And WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Our bankruptcy laws impact everything from police brutality to child sex abuse to health care for retirees and even climate change. We'll speak with the author of Unjust Debt, Melissa B. Jacoby, and retired bankruptcy judge Robert Gordon, who has witnessed the laws in action. An expose. Stay with us. Good morning, good morning, and welcome to a special edition of What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. When we think about bankruptcy, we tend to think of an individual or small business owner who has fallen on hard times, faces insurmountable debt, and has to rely on the system to help him or her recover. And at the same time, we remember the wealthy individuals who manipulate the system and filed numerous times, case in point, former President Donald Trump, who has reportedly filed bankruptcy six times. So is the system serving who, or rather, who is it intended to serve when it was written into our U.S. Constitution, or is it dysfunctional? And can it be repaired? Melissa B. Jacoby is a Graham Kanan Law Professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She's also a Sullivan and Cromwell Visiting Professor of Law at Harvard University, and she's the author of Unjust Debt, How Our Bankruptcy System Makes America More Unequal. She says hers is a story about falling out of love with the federal bankruptcy code. Good morning, Professor Jacoby, and welcome to What's at Stake.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So we're also joined by the Honorable Judge Robert Gordon, who sat on the United States Bankruptcy Court for the District of Maryland for 14 years. So he's ruled in a fair share of cases. He's almost 40 years of experience as both an attorney and on the bench as a judge. He's retired as a judge but continues to teach, and he serves on our WPFW local station board. Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Vernon. How you doing?
Just fine. Welcome. Great to have you. So, Professor, your book is basically an expose. I would never have expected that bankruptcy laws can impact everything from sexual harassment, health care, police violence, to employment discrimination, child sex abuse, the opioid crisis, and gun violence. That covers just about everything. But actually, it doesn't cover love and marriage, or does it?
Well, Bankruptcy does intersect with love and marriage quite a bit, and I think Judge Gordon can tell us even more about that from what he's seen on the bench. But what you say is the case that financial distress intersects with so many issues in our society, and our legal system actually considers all sorts of wrongs to be payable by money if someone has been harmed. And that means almost everyone becomes a creditor, and that has some distorting effects on our system.
Well, let me ask you this, Professor. What the far-reaching tentacles of the bankruptcy law, what inspired you to write this book? Did that have anything to do with it?
Well, I wrote this book for several reasons. One, as you already pointed out, I have had a shift in perspective throughout my studies and my time working on and in the bankruptcy system. I continue to think it's extremely important part of our legal system and a form of social insurance for families and small businesses and sometimes for larger institutions. But along the way, something has gone a bit wrong, and sometimes even well-meaning intentions, well-meaning actions trying to make a bad situation better have been really regressive. We also know and have over a decade of rigorous research about the racial inequality in the bankruptcy system, and knowing that within the system hadn't led to any changes, and Congress hasn't stepped in to make the changes it should make. So I wanted to share these stories, and it is a book of stories, with the general public to try to talk about it in a way that isn't just for people who work in the system who know the jargon and fancy language.
So you contend that the bankruptcy law is making America unequal, that it's not actually doing what it was intended to do by our forefathers who wrote it into the Constitution, what they intended it to do. What was it designed to do, and how is it not doing that now, Professor?
There's widespread agreement, I think, among those who study law and the relationship between those who owe money and those who are owed money, that there comes a time when if one person owes lots of people money and can't possibly repay, we need some sort of specialized system to deal with that collective procedure. It's not just one party against another, it's a group of people. And there is a need, especially there, to be fair to everyone whose legal obligations have not been fulfilled, not just whoever can race to the courthouse the fastest. So the objective was, on the one hand, to treat creditors fairly, and part of my message is that I don't think that's happening, and it's not meeting the legal requirements. And then on the other hand, the bankruptcy system and the is in federal law, and the Constitution gives only Congress the right to provide debt relief, which is something states really can't do. And so debt relief for humans is at the core of what the system also should be doing. And there are a lot of economic benefits for that in addition to eliminating suffering. And so those are some of the things that the system is designed to do that I, again, where everyone falls on this sort of ideological spectrum, I think among those who study this area of law, are comfortable with the idea of fair treatment of creditors and some relief for the debtor.
And so, Judge Gordon, you sat there for 14 years. Do you share Professor's observations and conclusions about the system?
Without a doubt. And I'll just say, Vern, I had a little bit of trouble hearing you, but if the question was that I share Professor Jacoby's conclusions and thoughts on the system, I'll just say 100%. I think her book is brilliant. I encourage everyone to read it. It does make it possible for, you know, folks who are not lawyers and who haven't gone to law school to understand bankruptcy, but more particularly understand it in the context of how things are now and what the system has kind of morphed into. And there's a lot ugly about it. I'll just say it that way. I think her thoughts, her conclusions, as expressed in the book, certainly are right on the money. And it's always, bankruptcy is sort of a hidden area of the law. And I know it can seem that way about a lot of areas of the law, but many of them get more exposure in the media, you know, for a lot of reasons, because the media sort of gravitates to what they think people are going to, you know, become locked in on, continuing stories, et cetera, that are hot, that kind of thing. And bankruptcy sort of does its work in the dark. And, you know, my impression is there's a lot of bad work going on. I mean, I hate to say that, but I think it's absolutely true. So
can you recall one case or a type of case where the inequality of the system was really blatant?
Yeah, it's, I couldn't hear you at all there, Verna, but I think, did you want me to give you an example?
I do. An example of one case or a type of case where the inequality of the system was blatant.
Okay, well, that didn't happen in my courtroom, I'll just say. Okay.
Of course not.
So I mean, maybe the parties thought so. when they got the result, but you know, I strive to make sure that that didn't happen in my courtroom. But I mean, if you look at the discrete news sources that bankruptcy practitioners are familiar with, you're going to find them, you know, all the time. And I mean, one big example, and I'm really going to defer to Professor Jacoby to give more detailed information on these items because I know she studied them in great depth and great detail, but you know, Purdue Pharma, certainly. And, you know, thank goodness the Supreme Court stepped in over the summer to right the crucial wrong in that case in a big way. Who knows what's going to happen now? But just recently, I mean, how many of the listeners might be familiar with the Johnson & Johnson saga that's going on right now? And there was a ruling just this week that sort of continues the saga in favor of the perpetrator as opposed to those who have been injured. A great distinction that Professor Jacoby makes in her book is the difference between what we would consider to be normal creditors, you know, people who are in contractual relationships with corporations, entities that allow them to buy products and services on a credit basis where they have to pay 30 days out, that kind of normal basic stuff, as opposed to people that have been injured in mass tort circumstances. And it appears that that's exactly what's going on in the Johnson & Johnson case. And it's only one of a long string. The talc that they make, the baby powder that they make, is apparently related to, I think it's uterine cancer. Is that correct, Professor Jacoby?
It's ovarian cancer.
Ovarian cancer, I'm sorry. Long story short, they are now on their third attempt at Chapter 11, trying to file it in a district where they are confident they're going to get favorable results. And the reason it's the third attempt is because the two prior attempts were dismissed, thankfully, but they're at it again. And the system is in a context now where these giant corporations can file bankruptcy in districts, federal districts, where they believe they're going to get the result that they want and follow through on that path, often getting the result that they want. And there's a long list of companies that have been able to take advantage of that loophole, let's call it, in the system.
That's not an option the average citizen has, is that what you're saying, basically? Okay, I want to tell our audience that we're in the middle of our pledge drive, our fall pledge drive, and our program director, Katia Stitt, will be joining us momentarily. But before we hear from Katia Stitt, Professor Jacoby, you write about a discrepancy between the way real people and fake people are treated in the system. Introduce us to Sylvia, who you described as a real person, and walk us through how she was treated by the system.
Yes, so I do try to do something that often doesn't get done when people talk about this system or other areas of the law, to actually compare and contrast humans of modest means and financial distress with big companies or cities or nonprofits. So someone like Sylvia, who's based on decades of research about the real people who do file for bankruptcy, was on top of her financial circumstances, paying her bills until her mother got ill and needed her help for care, and her job was insufficiently flexible. Probably listeners relate to this story. And so she could not retain that job. That disrupted her health insurance. And what did she look to in the meantime to be able to pay the bills, to continue to be able to feed herself and her mother? She used credit cards. And Professor Abby Atkinson at Berkeley Law School has written so much about how this society relies on credit or is incentivized to look to high-priced credit cards as a way to fill the gaps. That is not a long-term solution, as Sylvia's story suggests, because even if she does repay and repay and repay and covers the principal, the interest continues to grow and the fees, and now she's in a hole that she can never get out of unless she ultimately can get through bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is a very blunt instrument in the law. It cancels debts. It gives you a breathing spell. It does not job retrain. It does not make people well. It does not print more money. And so the question is, how does the system treat people like Sylvia? And the answer right now is it's too complicated and too expensive. And economists that I know and have written about this agree with that and think it should be simpler.
Okay. I guess you'll let us know, Michael, when Katia Stitt is available to join us, our program director, to let our audience know that we are in the middle of our fall pledge drive. And we'd like for you to make a pledge to go to 202-588-9739.
Good morning, Verna.
1-800. Yes. Okay. Good morning, Katia. How are you? Our
esteemed and to your guest.
Hi, Katia.
Good morning.
So WPFW has the highest Arbitron rating of all the five Pacifica stations, actually higher than all four stations' ratings put together. And that's not to put them down, but that's just to lift up our program director. She's responsible for the stellar programming you hear on WPFW. No matter how good a job you're doing, though, it means nothing if you, the listeners, don't appreciate it and show your appreciation. So this is when you can do that, so that we can have the resources we need to continue to produce quality programming. Go to the phone.
Absolutely.
202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739.
Well, Verna, I just want to thank you for those kind words. I want to also add to that, though, that this is indeed, what's at stake is indeed a stellar listen. It is always insightful. It is educational. It is always the thing that we need. You know, you do such excellent journalistic work, and you bring voices and topics that are not often heard across the media landscape. And today's in-depth discussion, you know, we might hear the soundbite of bankruptcy or statistics about bankruptcy, but to go inside what that really means and how it affects people, and the stories of people who have been affected by it, is something that you don't hear, and that is...
Okay, you're getting broken up a little bit, Katia. But she was saying is something that you don't often hear. I can sort of remind our listeners of some of the stories that they've heard on What's at Stake. Does your vote really count? The Electoral College 101, the backstory behind the RFK Jr. Trump endorsement. We spoke with journalist Greg Palace, Doctors Against Genocide, the team of dedicated physicians working under the duress of Israeli attacks on the people of Gaza. the silent crisis of prostate cancer, more prevalent among African-American men. These are some of the stories you've been hearing on WPSW's What's at Stake. Project 2025, we took a deep dive and an analysis into that. Gray divorce, why a couple chooses to spend their twilight years without their mate. The award-winning author, Marita Golden, of course, we know she was a clue on the popular show Jeopardy. We also had Keith Kilgo of the Blackbirds, an African-American rocket scientist, Dr. Wesley Harris. He's the father of our WPSW programmer, Kamal Harris. And Dr. Omikongo Dibinga, author of Lies About Black People, How to Combat Racist Stereotypes and Why It Matters. You know what we have? We do have a contribution from Patrice Gaines. She, of course, you all may know as the author, inspirational speaker. She's the author of Laughing in the Dark. She's also the author of Say Their Names, How Black Lives Came to Matter in America. And she worked on the case to win exoneration for the young men in the District of Columbia who were wrongly accused and incarcerated for the Catherine Fuller murder case. So 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. Please go to your phones now and make a contribution to WPSW, to What's at Stake, so we can keep our precious radio station afloat. Go ahead, Katia.
And Verna, okay, you can hear me better. I just want to remind people that we have a modest goal this morning of $500, but every dollar counts. So if you can help, as Patrice has done, towards the goal for What's at Stake this morning, please support that now, which supports you. Verna Avery Brown and her incredible team of producers for What's at Stake every week do a stellar job. And now we ask you to give back. You know, we're the call, you're the response. So we ask you to now respond to us, 800-222-9739, wpfwfm.org. It is your dollars, your financial contributions that have allowed WPFW to survive and even thrive since 1977. We cannot do this work without you. What's at Stake is a wonderful listen. I know it's appointment listening for many. So please do your part right now. Support the great work of Verna Avery Brown, this important discussion on bankruptcy, especially in these perilous financial times. It's important information to have. So we want to return to that. But right now we ask you, as we return to that, to make a pledge of support by calling 202-588-9739, $500 to go, or you can go online to wpfwfm.org. And Verna, if you allow me to, I'll return and hopefully help you to thank some folks on the next break.
Yes, indeed, because we need you, our listeners. No amount is too large or too small. Cut back a couple of Starbucks coffees if you're still purchasing from them. But if you're listening to the show this morning and you listen every Wednesday at 9 a.m., you appreciate What's at Stake. Show us your appreciation by making a donation this morning. We have listeners overseas. I want to invite you to make a pledge. Can we get a Silver Spring donation? A Southeast D.C. donation? Is Upper New York Northwest in the house? How about Bowie or Randallstown? And how about Columbia? I know you're listening. And our Virginia listeners, don't be shy. This is your day to step it up, help out, be part of the solution. We're all in this together. This is a community radio station. 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. You can be anonymous, or we can call your name out and thank you on the air. So thank you, Katia, for joining us. Again, our guests this morning are Melissa B. Jacoby, a Graham Keenan Law Professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She's also a Sullivan and Cromwell Visiting Professor of Law at Harvard University, and she's the author of Unjust Debt, How Our Bankruptcy System Makes America More Unequal. We're also joined by the Honorable Judge Robert Gordon, who sat on the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Maryland for 14 years, about 40 years of experience as both an attorney and on the bench as a judge. And he also serves on our WPFW local station board. This is the quality of individuals we have here at WPFW. If you want to be a part of that family, we invite you to go to the phones right now and make a pledge. But before we went to break, Professor, you introduced us to a real person by the name of Sylvia. Now describe what you call in your book a fake person.
Under the law in the United States, corporations are people for many purposes. So they're considered people, but they don't breathe and they don't bleed. And more can be created tomorrow, indeed right now, with a couple of forms submitted in any state across the country. And so we have to think about those cases perhaps a little bit differently in light of that, but those cases very much affect real people, and the decisions are of course made by real people. And so the concern is that big corporations especially, and that could also be a big city or a big nonprofit, but it's usually a for-profit company, not only are given more legal perks in bankruptcy than financially distressed humans, but they are pushing the envelope over and over again to sort of remake the bankruptcy system, and that redistributes the value and the benefits to parties that weren't intended to receive it. So there's extraction going on, and that's hurting others in the process.
Now, you used an example in your book of a movie, Freaky Friday. I wonder if you can share that with us.
Well, I thought that the Freaky Friday movie or book, and I guess there's going to be another one very soon, an update, resonates.
Didn't see that movie, so tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. So Freaky Friday involves a mother and a daughter who think the other doesn't understand them, and then wake up and end up in their shoes and have to live a day realizing that they're now a daughter or a teenager or the parent, and you start to see things differently. And what I'm getting at with this story is then to imagine a lawyer who works in personal bankruptcy swaps places with a lawyer who works on the biggest cases in the country or indeed the world. And in this way, I want to suggest that our system not only creates racial disparities and the fake and real people disparity, but there are a lot of class issues going on in the bankruptcy system, including among the professionals. So I suggest, by using the Freaky Friday analogy, that if a lawyer who usually represents big bankrupt businesses or big lenders in those cases would be very surprised and wouldn't really know how to maneuver if they woke up and then had to work in the personal bankruptcy system. Now, as Judge Gordon knows, it's the same court. It's the same book of law. And yet, very different things going on here. And I wanted to make the lawyers also more aware of this if they decide to read the book, but also the general public to be thinking about how differently these systems are operating.
So aren't there basically rules and regulations that I thought was kind of a lot of like a plug-in system? If you have this much debt or whatever, then this is how you do. And your bankruptcy will be on your credit record for, what is it, 7 years?
Well, it depends on the kind of bankruptcy, can have some effect. But so this is what it would be nice if we had a simpler story to tell about how the system is generating inequality. And I have to tell a messier story because I want to tell a story that's true. So the difference between the treatment of humans who are in financial distress and their families versus big companies actually does start with Congress. It starts with what Congress wrote in that book called the Bankruptcy Code. And Congress, to some extent at the behest of the credit industry and also on the wave of the same kind of messages we saw with welfare reform in the 90s, created a system that is way less trustful of humans than it is of big businesses. Piling onto that then is appellate courts, Supreme Court, that doesn't take that many cases, but only occasionally weighs in, but the courts of general jurisdiction that have to hear and decide how our system works. And for example, when I'm talking about student loans and the treatment of student loans and how that especially falls hard on Black individuals, it is often the circuit court, the appellate court just below the Supreme Court, that has put in place the harshest interpretation that doesn't necessarily comport with the statutory language. In addition to that, we have so much that goes on outside of courts altogether. So much of the activity happens in the hallways and in conference rooms and in other places. So I want to suggest that there may be times where we do see, certainly one bankruptcy judge and another might do things differently, and sometimes they are contributing to the bias. But this is a way more complicated story than that. There are more forces of both implicit bias or maybe not so implicit, as well as these structural differences that Congress put in place that should be fixed.
Well, let's bring the judge in on that. So, Judge Gordon, what authority does the judge have to remedy this aspect of the process? Is there anything the person applying for bankruptcy can do to ensure that he or she gets a fair shake?
Well, I'm trying to restrain myself from giving an answer that goes on forever. Yes, I'll say, and I know Professor Jacoby can relate to this. You know, we often say, as a young lawyer, I learned, you know, the saying that bankruptcy courts are courts of equity, you know, was something that we heard all the time. And that if you didn't have much else to say, that's what you would say to the judge to try and win the day for your client. And the reason I bring it up here is because judges do have a tremendous amount of discretion, and especially bankruptcy judges have a tremendous amount of discretion, but you have to have a judge that's willing to use it in the proper direction, which I would say is, you know, fairness, compassion, and an understanding for the folks that are in front of you that are suffering under the burden of debt. So that certainly can come into play. But I really want to emphasize the point that Professor Jacoby is making, in that the law is written differently for individuals than it is for corporations, period, end of sentence. And because corporations are going to have the money and the wherewithal, and often the backing of other power players who also have money and wherewithal to get the result that they want in the bankruptcy court, they're highly trained lawyers who went to excellent law schools and can make hundreds of millions of dollars out of bankruptcy cases, are going to push with everything they have to extend the boundaries of the law that's already written in their favor, okay? To get as much as they can get. And that's really been the state of affairs in the bankruptcy court for several decades now. I don't know, I would, you know, 30, 40 years. The bankruptcy code that we're working with now was enacted in 1979. So that's how far back this particular version of the code goes.
So Judge, can you take us sort of into your courtroom, for example, and if you can recall one situation where you had to use your judicial authority or discretion to sort of even the playing field?
Well, it's a long story. I'll try and keep it short, but I had a woman who filed bankruptcy after going through a domestic litigation where, I'll just say it, she believed that her husband had sexually abused her two children. So, and her husband had a lot more money than she did. She was able to fund her side of it because her dad was a surgeon and he was willing to pay up to a certain point. But the bottom line is they both spent well over $1 million in the state court litigating this issue. She was convinced that that's what had happened. And of course, the story on the other side was that nothing, you know, untoward had happened. She lost, which meant that there was shared custody. She wanted custody in her own, you know, standing without him being able to have any custody at all. But she lost. And because of a dispute with the first set of lawyers she had, she filed bankruptcy. She had to fire them. She still owed him about $140,000. She filed bankruptcy. She ended up owing her second attorney about $800,000. Wow. So here she is in the bankruptcy court. When you file bankruptcy, especially for consumers, you're under an obligation to sign and date everything under oath and under penalties of perjury, and you're under an obligation to provide all of your financial information without reservation that the documents require. In fact, this is why Rudy Giuliani's case was dismissed, because he refused to do that. Yeah, that was the reason for it. Because the story that she, because the reality that she underwent before she filed bankruptcy was so terrible, she shared it with her bankruptcy attorney, and he was traumatized listening to her. And her documents were a complete mess. They were the worst set of statement of financial affairs and schedules that I've ever seen, which in some districts would be prima facie grounds for her losing her discharge. In other words, the other side wouldn't have to do much more than submit these documents into evidence compared to what reality is and say, judge, deny her discharge. But when they explained the story to me, and in that instance, I actually decided to reopen the trial after it was held and put her attorney, when he didn't get on the stand, but they took his deposition. I wanted him to testify to explain what had happened, because that was the one missing element that was not in the record. And he did that and he explained it. And with all of that, I decided that no matter how bad the documents were, she deserved a discharge because of the circumstances I just described. So I was able to do that. They didn't appeal it. And that was the result. And she sent me an email about a year or so. If I start talking about it, I'm going to get emotional. I'm telling you, she sent me an email about a year ago expressing her gratitude and how she was able to carry on with her life. She was remarried. She sent me pictures of her wedding. And now she's a practicing nurse. And after that, we got together for lunch and sort of shared our perspectives from, you know, where we sat during the course of the case. So
she was clearly appreciated.
That case means a lot to me. And I guess there are other examples too, but that's the best example.
Okay. That's pretty good. That helps us to sort of feel as though we are in the courtroom. If you are just joining us, this is What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. That was Judge Robert Gordon that you just heard from. Our other guest is Professor Melissa Jacoby. And we are inviting you, the listener, to take part in this program by making a contribution. We are in the middle of our pledge drive. The number to call is 202-588-9739.
And you know, Verna?
Yes.
I will say that again, this discussion is so illuminating. You know, I'm sure many of our listeners had no idea what bankruptcy entails and how it can adversely affect people. And to hear these stories, to hear the information is so important. And if you are out there listening to us, if you're within the sound of our voices, we ask you to support that which supports you. Support the excellent work that Verna Avery Brown, longtime WPFW host and journalist, does with her exceptional group of hosts that the collective that she has assembled. Please make that pledge of support now. $500 to go. 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org are the ways to connect. Again, 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org. And please consider becoming a, we're talking about bankruptcy. You may not have money right now. So please, or a lot of money to spend, but please consider supporting us as a sustaining member, pledging $10, $20, $30, $50, $100 a month to WPFW. It is a wonderful thing for us. It allows us to be able to plan financially, but it also allows Verna, in this case, the host, to receive that entire credit. So if, for instance, if someone within the sound of our voices pledges $50 now a month, we will receive $600 and we will have exceeded the goal. So please do your part to sustain this media treasure. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org.
And I will say that attorney poet Cillian Green from Washington, D.C., often a guest on What's at Stake and WPFW, part of the WPFW family, she has pledged a gift as well. I will let you all know what the gifts are. I don't know if she wants to announce it on air, but her gift and Patrice's gift, they're lowering our goal. But we do still need your contribution. So if you're out there listening and enjoying and appreciating this information that we're trying to educate our community, to empower our listeners. Information is power. And an informed person is not to be reckoned with. And we want you to be the best informed person in a discussion. That's how you change minds and hearts. Contribute to changing the world. Won't you make a contribution right now? We need you. 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9737. Okay, let me do that again. 1-800-222-9737. Go to your phones right now.
And it's 9739.
Yep. Thank you, Mike. 9739. 1-800-222-9739.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you, Professor.
Verna, can I say one thing?
Certainly.
Please. First of all, one of the things that you didn't mention about Professor Jacoby that I'm sure she, you know, would want people to know, she's a mentee of Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Senator Warren is a bankruptcy geek. She taught bankruptcy at Harvard Law School, and I think that has a lot to do with her compassionate perspective on the world and her view of, you know, how things should be for the little person. And I'm not trying to take over the show, but I'd really like Professor Jacoby to draw the contrast between, you know, my description of what it's like for the consumer. The consumers and the individuals have to go through a lot to get where they want to be in bankruptcy, and that's Congress's responsibility, and what the difference is between how they're treated and the giant corporations who file bankruptcy and usually find themselves in the catbird seat when they do. Because of the power and the money that they bring with them into the court system.
Professor, I mean, he articulated perfectly. I better watch my seat here.
The judge asks, I answer. So, yes, how are fake and real people treated differently? And let me say also that the kinds of contrasting points I'm going to make are also what contributes to racial disparities in this system that need to be fixed. So big corporations can cancel more debts than humans can. The range of types of legal obligations that they get debt relief from is broader if they go through a reorganization. Big corporations can cancel their legal obligations faster. They are allowed to do so after getting a plan approved, whereas humans have to prove that they are going to make it all the way through their repayment plan before they get that relief if they're in that type of bankruptcy. and African-American families are disproportionately steered toward that kind of bankruptcy, even if repayment plan bankruptcy doesn't match their particular needs otherwise. There's less public oversight of big companies. They're allowed to defer more to their own discretion, business judgment. And the big companies also, Judge Gordon alluded to this, are just have more flexibility to rewrite the rules of bankruptcy in ways that financially distressed families are never allowed to do. Now, I'm someone who would argue and posit that sometimes we think that discretion in a court is always going to be more progressive, always going to be helpful. I argue in this book that discretion can be regressive, and that we do need to take care with the kind of decisions that judges are human too, have to make in that split second with limited information versus setting up a system in which these considerations are already tried to be balanced out. So the upshot of this from me is not that we make everything more flexible. If anything, I'd like to nail down some things a little bit more firmly with the lessons that we can take from the research that we have.
Okay. So there are two different types of bankruptcy that a person can actually file, Chapter 7 and Chapter 11. And so Chapter 7, the business closes its doors and assets are sold to pay off the debt. Chapter 11, the business continues to operate under court supervision. Does that apply to individuals as well? Same system. Okay.
Well, so, I don't want to throw too many chapters at you, but there are these options. They are multiple paths for many kinds of debtors. Corporations rarely try to liquidate on their own because they can't, or go to that Chapter 7 because they want to maintain more control, and their lenders do too. But yes, individuals also, there are two paths, a repayment plan path and a more direct relief path. Chapter 7 and Chapter 13 is what they are called.
So now we hear how former President Donald Trump, allegedly, I have said allegedly, I don't know for sure, has filed bankruptcy 6 times. Is that something that an average individual could do, file bankruptcy 6 times?
Well, no, but I also would note here that the flexibility his cases may have gotten, or the ways he used bankruptcy, were because they were corporate bankruptcies. They were his businesses. Now, that does not absolve him of responsibility for the things that his business did or didn't do, notorious for not paying people, whether they were in bankruptcy or not. But the way that that business bankruptcies are perceived is very, very different from how personal bankruptcies are perceived in terms of being, whether it's a wise business strategy to manage obligations versus the stigma that's associated with families who tried everything they possibly could to stay out of bankruptcy and just couldn't stay afloat.
So if an individual files Chapter 7, how long does that stay on the credit? If the idea was intended to help individuals recover, why does it stay on the credit so long?
Judge Gordon, did you want to answer that, or I can answer?
Well,
I
want to say, under the bankruptcy code, the 7 years or the other time period relates to how much time must pass before you can get another discharge.
I see.
Okay. So if you get a discharge in a Chapter 7, you have to wait. It is 7 years, or is it 8 years, Professor Jacoby? I think 7 or 8. It's in the code. But it's about that period of time that you'd have to wait before you can file bankruptcy again and get another discharge. I really think that the credit reporting agencies sort of have their own policies as to how long they're going to keep a bankruptcy filing on somebody's credit report. And that's more or less a private decision. I don't think there's any legislation that impacts, or is there, Professor Jacoby?
Well, the Fair Credit Reporting Act does have rules on how that a maximum amount. But I think what we should focus on here, I'd suggest, is the reality that there are going to be consequences to filing for bankruptcy, no matter what, in the marketplace. That is a reality of our system.
And, for example, give us some quick examples.
Well, you might, some suppliers may not want to do business with you. You may be charged more for credit. You may be denied credit. On the other hand, sometimes it honestly goes the other way. Some researchers have found that people who emerge from that Chapter 7 with a fairly clean slate, if they're able to do so, are getting lots of credit offers because, as Judge Gordon says, they wouldn't be able to get more debt relief for quite some time. So lenders are entitled under the law to make decisions, at least for some period of time, about a decade, about that take into account whether you filed for bankruptcy. This book does not critique that broader reaction. I think that the concern is really the other way, to say when the law becomes too restrictive for individuals, that can be an incentive for lenders to give more reckless credit on with very high costs. And that has broader effects, certainly not only on the family, but on our community, on our society, and our broader economy. We can think about the financial crisis, the mortgage crisis, and what happens when credit is in ample supply without considering the risks of doing so. The relationship between bankruptcy and credit markets is a longer story than we have time for, but I think that we want to think about it both ways, that it is okay to say that there are going to be some financial consequences to filing for bankruptcy in terms of credit going forward. But that also means, but that does not mean that bankruptcy should be restricted further. If anything, we need it to be more targeted and effective. Mm-hmm. And they are going to face some consequences to that.
So fair, I know, or not. That Professor, Senator Elizabeth Warren, as Judge Gordon mentioned, was a professor that awakened you to the discrepancies in the system. Can you expect legislation to begin to address these issues?
Well, Senator Warren and others are often at work on legislation, as I don't need to tell this audience. There are a couple things going on in the world and in this country that they're also trying to address. But I testified at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing last fall that addressed what Judge Gordon mentioned earlier, Johnson & Johnson trying to use bankruptcy to limit its liability to women who allege that talc gave them ovarian cancer, and talc was marketed especially to Black women for quite some time. I noticed at that hearing something that I think it's important for listeners to see, which is there was bipartisan critique of Johnson & Johnson at that hearing.
Thank you so much. We are running out of time. I want to mention that one of the founders of WPFW texted me that she made a contribution, Denise Oliver of the Young Lords, and she was the second general manager here at WPFW. She has made a contribution as well. So we thank you, Denise. We thank you, Attorney Sue Lillian Green. Thank you, Patrice Gaines, and other listeners who may want to make a contribution. The number again is 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739. Okay, and I want to thank our program director, Katia Stitt, for her participation this morning. And thank you to all our listeners as well. That was Melissa B. Jacoby, who is a professor, a Graham Keenan Law Professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and a Sullivan and Cromwell Visiting Professor of Law at Harvard University. The author of Unjust Debt, How Our Bankruptcy System Makes America Unequal. And also joined by the Honorable Judge Robert Gordon, who sat on the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Maryland for 14 years.
He has almost 40 years of experience as both an attorney and on the bench. And he is also, we are proud to say, a member of our local station board. So our host next week, the inimitable Dr. Marsha Colvin Adebayo. And thanks to our engineer, Michael Nasella, and to our program director, Katia Stitt. Up next, stay awake, wake up and stay woke, Dr. Ife Williams. I'm Verna Avery Brown. And in the words of the late Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done. Ashe.
Friends of the Congo and WPFW invite you to Love Sound, an evening of Soul Sisters in performance on Sunday, October 20th, 5 to 8 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street, Southwest Washington. Performers include Free Benjamin, Wayna, Anna Molago, Ayana Gregory, Congolese artist Deja Bell, and Maimuna Yusuf. Details, including a complete list of performers, at wpfwfm.org or friendsofthecongo.org. All proceeds benefit Friends of the Congo's DRC Women, Peace, and Security Center in Kinshasa. And WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
It's attorney Nikichi Taifa, and I am thrilled to host a talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nikichi Taifa, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., for Human Rights and Justice.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Bethesda Theater presents Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
I testify!
Sophie's Parlor is the original woman's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
Fall is a time of change and impermanence. What never changes is WPFW's unwavering commitment to providing reliable news, informative public affairs, and exceptional music that inspires both action and introspection. From October 14th through November 3rd, we celebrate The Circle Unbroken, 47 years of being in the community with WPFW during our Fall Pledge Drive. We invite you to be in community and solidarity with us by making a donation at wpfwfm.org to ensure that this independent grassroots media outlet not only survives, but thrives.
It is with your generous support that we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources,